Hi folks, before we start the podcast, just to let you know that this was intended to be one of our patron-only podcasts, which we do quite regularly now. They live on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, but mid-conversation, I got a message from our pal, Seamus Malakavzali in Minnesota, that he was available to hop on and talk about events in Washington, D.C., and the Trump transition. So we just took advantage of that, switched lanes, and you know what, I've decided to put this out on main. Please, though, do consider heading over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and supporting the work. There's a lot of podcasts coming out. Tortoise Shack is a terrific collective, and we are hoping that you'll stick with us in 2021. And the only way that is possible is if people just put their hands in their pockets and throw in the price of a cup of coffee every month. There are thousands of people listening. We need a few hundred of you to at least try and help us out. Thanks. Talk to you all soon. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and Martin, we were just talking earlier, and it was this kind of, the monopoly numbers are out, and it doesn't really matter at this stage, you know, because you got to think, when the government themselves had said, once it gets over 2,500, we'll do X, Y, and Z. And now we're looking at a multiple of that. So whether it's 7,000, 10,000, 9,000, of course those numbers matter to individual people. But what actually matters more are the actions that they said they would take and are failing to take.
Yeah, it's out of control. When you're listening to the people from NEFA today, they're pretty much saying, unless you have any reason to be out that's saving lives, don't go out. And no matter how sick, you know, if you have sneezes, coughs, whatever, it's not the flu. You have COVID. I think it's also worrying, Tony, and I hate the old finger pointing, but they are increasingly saying that there are people flouting the quarantine and who are not isolating themselves, and it's increasing the spread. And I think everybody has to start taking it really, really seriously.
Yeah, no, there's no option. You got to stay home. I mean, go check out our podcast we did a couple of hours ago with Anthony O'Connor in Tala Hospital. He just got his first dose of the vaccine, and he's looking at his team decimated by either positive tests or close contacts, and you know, people having to cover other shifts. And insofar as where we were in April, it's the same position, except for with less people able to actually help you. So, I mean, this stuff has to give way. You know, it absolutely has to give way.
Well, just a little word about the vaccines. I was talking to a few people yesterday about, you know, what's the process involved? What training is needed? And it seems to be that training for the odd anaphylactic reaction is the big holdup, that a lot of people have to get training for this. Now, the training is not huge. It's just how to deal with it. Anaphylactic reaction is nothing new. You can get it to all kinds of things, including foods and drinks. But there's the fact that so many people are tied up at the moment dealing with COVID means that there just isn't the capacity there to either train or give them the time to train to do this. And something has to be done. Something has to give. If they're looking to jab their way out of this, well, then you actually have to jab your way out of it. And our numbers are pretty shocking on the amount of getting vaccinated.
Yeah, the numbers are really, really, really. Being kind, it's a slow start, and that's been very exceptionally kind. Okay, isn't it? Like, I mean, we're really dressing that up now. It's nothing shy. I think France are only behind us because they've decided to have a national debate about the efficacy of vaccines, which is just seems insane. I've seen last night we had Gabriel Colleran on, we're brilliantly speaking about the ray of hope that this is, and then today we had Anthony O'Connor. Both have now received the first dose, and I would gladly, as much as I love them, I'd gladly push them both out of the way and steal that vaccine if
I
could.
I was talking to my elderly folks last night, and you know, I said it to my dad, who's in his 80s in precarious health, and he said he'd lick it off the leg of a leper right now, and I, you know, I kind of agree with them, you know, and I agree. I'm so hoping that they get it soon, you know.
Yeah,
But you know, we have to talk. There's 11 billion there. We could be spending really be spending.
And again, to go back to the short conversation with Anthony O'Connor earlier, he spoke about the fact that we leased the private hospitals and then we gave them back at a huge, you know, they did great. They did gangbusters out of it. I mean, we ended up paying more in rent for a few months than one of the companies paid for the actual.
Yeah. Well, I saw today a call for them to pull on the green jersey. Well, if you're right, if that's your line of defense, I think you're boogered, really, aren't you, when you're asking people to pull on the green jersey?
Well, what's interesting about the private hospitals, and this is not to have a go at them, that's what they're there for, okay? That's capitalism. They're there to make money. But I saw the Tánaiste making the point that, you know, they're willing to do capacity, do a deal with us again. The deal was just too good to be true for them the last time, okay? These entities are dependent on the public partnership that they have. You know, they pick the low-lying fruit, as we know. They take, you know, the elective surgeries. They take these surgeries and they charge top dollar for them. Yes, the argument then as well, doesn't it help create capacity in the public service? Of course it does, but at what cost? So the cost then ultimately, as Anthony put to us, is why doesn't he just do it? Listen, we're going to be joined right now, actually, by our friend Seamus Malakavazali from the US. So give me 2 seconds and I'll just bring him in. Seamus, can I ask straight off the bat? Okay, sure. We had these conversations. We've been talking for a few months and we've seen that he wasn't going to go quietly, but was he? Where the structures of American democracy, you know, and I'm doing that, and were they strong enough to withstand the attack? It looks to me now that I mean this in a positive sense, and I'm going to be in trouble for saying it, but it looks to me like the idea of American exceptionalism, it's dead, surely.
Oh. 100%. 100%. I mean, you know, people in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever. I mean, it's not difficult to see that the idea of like America exporting democracy or America being kind of a unique force of liberty, that's pretty much a myth. But I don't think that there has ever been a time in history where it's been laid out as a falsehood so clearly and so widely and so obviously. I mean, God, it almost defies the ability to like satirize it or make fun of it or joke about it. Because I mean, you just look at the images of people people named like Q Shaman or Baked Alaska, going into Nancy Pelosi's office to make phone calls. And these people aren't just like a random mob that sprouted out of nowhere. These are people that were egged on by the president of the United States in a speech, you know, just a couple hours before the break-in happened. And then when the break-in happened and it turned out that it was out of control, the same president that egged everybody on up until this point had to do like a short video on Twitter that says, okay, everybody, let's go home.
Is he actually able to put the toothpaste back in the tube? I mean, no, he's not.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was clear from the minute that it went out of control that this was impossible to try to temper down. They had to call in the SWAT team to make sure that everybody knew that they had to leave the Capitol building. And I mean, after this, there were protests. I mean, a little bit before this, but then after this, I mean, these right-wing protesters that had been pretty adamantly going for Blue Lives Matter slogans, very, very pro-police.
Yes, absolutely.
They were talking, they're stomping on the thin blue line flags. They were talking about, they're, you know, screaming at cops. I mean, they were being brutalized by the same people they've been defending.
Seamus, so, okay, just to outline events. So obviously Trump called for this a while back, you know, since the election fell apart. He has been, I think he's had 60 cases to try and legal cases, and he's won one of them, I think, because of a procedural thing. And he has had, you know, so, but he's called for this. we're kind of lucky that DC has some sort of gun control, are we not?
Oh, certainly, certainly. DC has the, I want to say, the strictest gun laws in the entire United States. There was a previous incident kind of like this, I want to say back in like 2012, 2013, where libertarian activists tried to organize an open carry march through DC to protest those gun laws. But then the main organizer of it, Adam Kokesh, got arrested for brandishing a shotgun in a YouTube video that was entirely separate from it. And then that kind of fear, it kind of splintered out and sputtered out. But yeah, when the penalties are so strict, when the ability to buy guns from the city, to get guns in the city is so restrictive, it becomes, I mean, obviously it didn't prevent them from getting into the U.S. Capitol building and ransacking the place, but it prevented it from becoming at least a widespread, like a bloodbath on the part of the protesters instigating it and not by the police, because the police were strangely restrained for the most part.
Does that beg the question, in other areas of the U.S., is this over or is this just boiling and are we going to see something else elsewhere?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think in terms of rhetoric, this is going to go on for a very, very, very long time. But when Trump is out of office and there's no kind of top-down way for it to be encouraged and instigated, it's going to certainly become more difficult, but I won't say for sure that it's going to be, you know, stopped at this kind of level. I mean, Trump has been planning to go for a 2024 re-election campaign almost immediately. He can do things from there, but obviously it's going to be a bit hamstrung when he's not no longer at the top in that kind of throne, as it were.
It is insane, though. Like, I mean, and insane is the right word. It's not, I don't want to do hyperbole, but the idea is now that we've seen his allies abandon him literally as the ship is slipping below the surface. It's like,
I think 20 minutes ago before this recording, the transportation secretary resigned. That's the first
that's
cabinet
right.
secretary.
That's right. Yeah.
So like people are now finally, there must be a sale on backbone because they've decided that they've found their backbone. But nonetheless, the damage is much worse than that. It's much more, it's much long term than that, because even the people who were coming out yesterday and saying to him, you know, oh, I this is too much for me, they are now facing a situation where if he does choose to run, they're still going to have to run against him.
It's a really interesting scenario kind of playing out in front of us right now, in that the optics of this to the political establishment, obviously to Democrats it's horrifying, but to the Republicans, I mean, you look at this and it's this complete disaster of just people screaming. A woman got shot in the neck by a police officer because like she was a QAnon fanatic. I mean, this looks horrifying. It looks like you're a disorganized mob. And so the Republicans, like Mo Brooks, for example, from Alabama, was talking about how these were Antifa. Matt Gaetz was saying the same thing. These were Antifa instigators. These were not Republicans. These were not Trump supporters. But when they polled Republicans, as in the actual Trump supporters, not the people in Congress, 45% of them were in favor of it.
And like, and 70% of it think that the election is still illegitimate.
Yeah. I mean, you have to contend at a certain point that Trump's ideas, I mean, even if they're going to be, it's going to be slightly, and I do mean slightly, less of a problem when he is out of office and he's running from behind it again. Like, they're still going to be around.
And sorry,
at the very least 4 years from now. Yeah.
Can I, Martin, I know you wanted to come in, but I just want to make one point that of the poor woman who lost her life, she was a QAnon conspiracist, but she wasn't always that way. She was ex US military. She had served in many, you know, she was a good woman who was radicalized by Facebook and radicalized by these conspiracy theories. And it just seemed that, you know, we've seen the deaths that happened yesterday. Of course, And some of them people having heart attacks and people who are just dragged into this, Seamus. It must be insane to sit there and say, that's my grandma. That's my my first uncle or whatever it is. And it's just, it's bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, you hear, I believe she has a husband and a child that was left behind by it. I mean, there's so many, I mean, me personally, within my inner circle, I haven't heard of this happening, but I've heard, you know, friends, their family members, they just get sucked into it because it's a very interesting and compelling narrative that there's a plan. Trump's going to get reelected somehow. Everything has like strings behind it. Everything's in control and everything is going to become right with the world eventually. And when that narrative begins to fall apart so clearly and obviously, I mean, you're going to go insane. When you've been told for the past 4 years by someone, by like Facebook posts online, that everything will write itself, and then everything, you know, within 2 weeks, everything might not have written itself, I've become right. What do you do? What is your response to that?
You probably join Scientology or something because, you know.
But the QAnon seems to be able to encompass any wobble that's thrown at it. This is what's. I mean, the people who were in there yesterday when they were being interviewed, they absolutely believe that Trump wanted them in there. They absolutely believe that they have a right to be there, that their democracy has been usurped. But they're not using traditional channels of information. They're using this underground, this rabbit hole. How do you reach people to defuse them in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, people have talked about this as like some sort of like coup attempt.
Yeah.
It's not a coup attempt. It is by the barest definition of the term, it is a coup attempt. However, attempt is doing a lot of legwork there.
It looked like a bad school tour gone wrong.
Yeah.
There were parts of it that were pretty, pretty scary, but there were parts of it we were looking like Ben Stiller is going to come in any minute now and start guiding the people around and saying, if you look over here, this is where JFK stood, you know, this kind of stuff. It did look very much like but anyway, oversized kids at a bad school tour.
Yeah. I mean, we saw like last year in Bolivia, there were like military officials clearly behind things, right-wing politicians guiding protesters, you know, instigating everything. And if we're going to go for an extreme example, I mean, the beer hall push in Germany in the 30s, I mean, those had organization behind them. They had mechanisms of power, high, powerful mechanisms of power that were behind them, making sure everything went relatively smoothly. There is no leadership in this kind of thing. This was organized in the sense that everybody came to a march and then eventually erupted into a riot. But nobody is guiding anywhere to any one thing. Nobody has a contingency plan about what to do after they get into the rotunda. And like you saw the images of like the people when they got, everybody was evacuated from the Senate chamber and then a couple people were able to get in. And they're just like taking photos of themselves, like on the dice and like with the American flag and all of these things. They have no idea what they're doing. And then when the curfew comes in and they're told that they have to leave, they just left. There's nothing. It's an incredibly strange thing to witness when you see comparisons to all these horrifying things that America has done in the past. And then when it comes home and, you know, to roost, it's scary. It's kind of crazy to look at, but fundamentally there's nothing behind it. It's pathetic.
Would it be a mistake to think that there isn't some organizational level behind all of this? Because we know that the white supremacy groups have coalesced and that they're in touch with each other. And at some level, there's quite a lot of organization going on in this. So out of the 70 odd million people that voted for Trump, there has to be a percentage of those who are actually a real threat.
I think the crucial thing is that there is indeed some level of organization, but the key thing that separates it from, I think, other really threatening movements in other countries is that the organization only exists to, you know, instigate, to tear things up, to ferment it. But as soon as, you know, road hits rubber and you're asked to actually do something about it, then everything completely falls apart. There is no plan after that. The threat exists at that point where the violence can erupt from it. But the thing that makes that violence not exactly, it doesn't threaten any real power structures because there's no plan afterwards by anyone.
Can I put it to you though, that the reason there's no real threat and no real impetus behind it is because of money? Because the people who, you know, obviously there are people who are into Trump who believe in him as, you know, a guy who believes in nothing in his own ways. But the actual money, the Wall Streets and the techs and all the rest of it, they don't really care. Like, Biden's no much different than Trump, really. So the life will go on as much as in much the same way as it did. Meet the old boss, meet this new boss, same as the old boss. And that ultimately, even if Trump goes away now, the polarization for working class people in America, it sounds really bad, but this is ultimately, a lot of this comes down to a perception amongst the white community that they are now oppressed within their own country, as they would see it. And that must be absolutely infuriating for someone like you who has, you know, a broad heritage. Do you not see that is where the real danger is?
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, the failure of the Bernie Sanders campaign in a lot of ways was quite disheartening. But it was disheartening in the fact that a campaign was able to appeal to working class white people, to appeal to Latinos of all stripes, to appeal to just a wide variety of groups that other candidates really just were not able to across both parties. And the Democratic establishment worked against it, extinguished it. And in 2024, I mean, they're talking about potential candidates in the form of Josh Hawley, which espouses the same kind of faux populism that appeals to really only white working class people. Mm-hmm. And in the Democrats, I mean, people are so afraid of what Bernie Sanders represented and what he fought for, that they're allergic to any sort of thing that would appeal to, that would make them appeal to both people, to both kinds of people. My main fear is that, yeah, this is going to be something, as long as Trump continues to run in 2024, which I think by all accounts he's going to, that is going to be the continuing thing between these 4 years, that there is not going to be a candidate or a movement that really is able to appeal to all sorts of working class stripes, not just white working class stripes in that kind of way.
It is worth remembering, too, that Trump isn't the originator of this, that this has bubbled for a very long time in America. In fact, you could say it's bubbled for 200 years in America, and that he just brought it to the boil. But there are other players out there just as capable of bringing it to the boil as he is.
Oh, sure. I mean, when you talk about Trump, I mean, he is the evolution of every single one of these Republican politicians, what the rhetoric has been talking about for decades. And you can see it formulating and bubbling, and it'll come out fully formed in 2024, but there are a ton of politicians who want to be like Trump, but they want their backers, they want supporters to know that they're not maybe nearly as boisterous, maybe not nearly as unpredictable, but they still have that kind of solid pro-Trump stance, those stances of anti-immigration, anti, xenophobia in general, protectionism, all these different things.
Politely, though, Seamus, that's what it is. They want a more socially acceptable face of a Donald Trump without the rough edges.
Just barely politely. The main issue that Republicans have always had with Trump, really, is just the fact that he's embarrassing a little bit too many times. Yeah. Nobody resigned after Charlottesville, if you remember this, mm-hmm. after a woman was murdered by a car by raving protesters. Everybody was real concerned about it, but nobody resigned. The reason people are resigning now is because no matter how you spin it, you cannot reliably justify the storming of the, like, when you say it out loud, the storming of the U.S. Capitol building, it just sounds like an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Like, the idea is that if you can find a Republican politician who could run for president, who is popular and will not instigate a violent takeover of your own building, like, that's who you want. That's who you're really aiming for.
That's an upgrade. But it looks like with the Democrats, then on the flip side, have this absolute nonsense of sitting back and looking at people and saying, you know, this administration now is going to somehow heal these divisions, when ultimately the noises coming out of them since the actual result was blaming the left because they didn't win by enough.
Yeah. I mean, they're falling back on kind of like old things even now. If they're not just kind of talking kind of like empty promises about what they're going to do with Trump. I noticed that some people were talking about bringing up articles of impeachment again against Trump, because that worked, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Another waste of time. Yeah.
I mean, even if it's literally the correct thing you should do, I mean, he's going to be gone in 14 days. Mm. What is that? That doesn't accomplish literally anything. But yeah, it doesn't benefit them anything to actually try to mount an effective opposition. The Democrats are very happy to lose, but lose beautifully and very elegantly and very eloquently. That's what gets them a lot of investor money. It's what gets them, you know, good points in the media. But fundamentally, as long as that kind of capitalistic system remains in place, and everybody gets their money, I mean, what use do Democrats, mainstream establishment Democrats, really have to oppose this administration in a real, actual way? It really doesn't exist.
One other thing that I think America has to understand, even from my distance looking in, Trump had a very successful 4 years in doing some of the things that we'd object to, but what his party wanted done. You know, like, I mean, in terms of voter suppression, he was very good at that. They were very, you know, in terms of not just Supreme Court judges at every level, they managed to get their appointments on. And in terms of, obviously, tax breaks for the rich, repatriate your wealth back, you know, all of this way that it worked for a certain demographic, and that's been polite about how I'm putting it, of people who are okay with that. And he probably achieved more, and if that was his to-do list in 4 years, than most two-term presidents did.
Oh, sure. I mean, Trump, not just because of his persona, but he has a record. If you are a Republican voter, Trump may not have delivered, you know, the border wall, but he delivered pretty much everything else that you really wanted out of him. Like Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. He's negotiated all of these, this rebirth of Republican control over mm-hmm. legislators and courts and all these different things. He's rolled back, you know, the Iran deal and all these different things. It's not just rhetoric. It's, unfortunately, quite tangible to a lot of different people. Republicans like that. That's why they backed him for so long. But what would be even better is if someone could combine all these different things. And again, as I said earlier, if it was just a tiny bit less embarrassing, if he was just a little more polite, if he could actually remember things past like maybe like 2 weeks or 1 week, then that would be That would be prime. We could appeal to people this way, maybe.
Look, yesterday's scenes were absolutely, they've went around the world. Like we were, I don't know if you know that Ireland lost its mind, not this time with John King and his magic wall, but this time because we had Donny O'Sullivan from Kerry amongst the crowd reporting on CNN as their man on the ground. And we just love one of our own. So we all absolutely went, we have an Irish journalist on CNN. And, you know, fair play to the man. He's worked actually looking at the conspiracy theories for a number of years now, but nonetheless, those people aren't going away. This isn't going to go. And back to Martin's point, I do think that some of the guys that bought guns will want to shoot them, and we've seen recently that where incidents have happened. Of course, you know, if you look like me and Martin, it's a domestic incident. Whereas if you have your darker complexion, Seamus, it might be a lone wolf terrorist action. I'm scared that that's where this will ultimately happen, because surely to God, in a country of nearly 500 million people, there are enough of them that are going to cause some sort of trouble before this all ends.
I'm astonished that it hasn't happened earlier, honestly. This seems like, yeah, if it had been, if DC maybe had a little bit looser gun laws, if this had happened in maybe state over, maybe in Virginia or Maryland. I mean, maybe you would have seen clips of like these protesters firing on the Capitol Police. Maybe they would have gotten further into the rotunda or the Senate chamber earlier. I think the idea of I think some commentators are talking about like a successful coup d'etat at some point. I think that's pretty overblown. The real danger lies in somebody doing something stupid. And in America, it's very easy to get those facilities to do something very, very, very stupid. And doesn't require a big crowd behind you really necessarily. And I think at this point, with Trump out of office and that little piece of time, I think a lot of things are going to go crazy. And I think it's all, maybe not in the near future, but I think at some point in the near future, I think the probability, it means probability at a certain point. I feel like we're overdue for something quite like this.
But in reality, they didn't have to fire any shots yesterday. The very fact that it was a super spreader event when COVID is absolutely rampant in the US. And I'm not saying we're a whole lot better here. We've just discovered that the R number in Ireland is somewhere between 2.4 and 3, which is disastrous, utterly disastrous. But there are huge other problems besides Trump to deal with in America. Any sign of them getting on top of COVID at all?
I'm not going to lie to you. I see you like, you talk about Ireland not being able to deal with COVID, and I understand. I'm sure. However, when like we're over here looking in, it seems just a million light years like ahead of us. I mean, the distribution plan, I mean, we had been planning somewhere in the double digits of millions of vaccinated by the end of the year. I mean, I think we're at right now like 5 million, and we're about a week into January. I mean, all these different state distribution plans are completely haphazard. There's no, there's almost no coordination. I mean, Andrew Cuomo in New York was rolling out a plan to penalize hospitals. Like, I want to say he literally said $1 million if they gave out vaccines to non-hospital workers, people who weren't supposed to get it, even if the vaccine doses were about to expire. Like, you had to throw them out and you had to wait for new ones or you would be fined $1 million. It's just all of the worst aspects of American culture demanding that only deserved people get benefits, and American exceptionalism, and some of the drawbacks of federalism. It's all kind of coming to a hilt here, unfortunately. We're still miles ahead of the pack of a lot of the rest of the world by nature of all these different drug companies being based here in America. but it's not going nearly as well as a lot of people have hoped. I mean, one note about this. Back in 1947, there was a smallpox epidemic in New York City. And within a month, New York City was able to vaccinate 8 million people. We haven't even gotten there yet nationwide, and it's been almost 2 months. It's bad.
Yeah, no, it actually is diabolically bad. And I know we're going through a bad few weeks here, and we are absolutely going through a bad few weeks here. We have our own issues, and we have our issues with capacity. However, it's the one thing we've had is three kind of distinct waves. America has not really ever had anything other than exponential growth in many cases. You know, it's been flare-ups in different states, all right. It was initially a New York problem, then it was, you know, this problem. And, you know, the only thing we're seeing now is, and you guys have seen previously, is the guys that said, you know, lockdowns don't work, now understanding that, well, you know, well, actually you've killed people. That's what's actually happened in many cases, is that people are gone. Seamus, last thing for me on the events of yesterday, and I'm asking you this in a media sense, our view, obviously, of the US, I find it quite funny where people say, you know, obviously Fox News were pro-Trump, and they've had a little bit of a tiff, and he's gone even further on. Is it the American Network or Aon or whatever?
One America News Network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that they're a little bit further out there for him now. And but, you know, and then people tell us that, well, CNN are just as bad on the other side, and we'd look at it, well, you know, we raise eyebrows at that, going, really? You know, there's a lot of both sidesism goes on as far as we're concerned. Is the media landscape and then going to get any better post Trump? Because it's just been absolutely dire to a large degree, that this partisan and, you know, false balance nonsense.
No, I don't think so. Unfortunately, Trump is a ratings getter. Every single CNN executive, MSNBC executive said this plainly, publicly, explicitly. And Trump, even if he's not president, he's still going to be doing like a 2024 thing, pretty sure. And they're going to want to focus on that pretty closely. He's still going to fill the airwaves. We're still going to have to talk about him constantly. We're still going to have to talk about all these different issues that he didn't put into motion, but that he contributed to pretty massively. And no, I unfortunately don't think that we're going to be free of it, at least not anytime before 2024. No, the thing is only getting worse from here.
Well, our good friend in Minnesota, please mind yourself, because I tell you, we can mock all we want, but it only takes one madman like Martin.
You'd have to point the finger at me, wouldn't you? I'm so sane. I am so stoic and sane.
Oh, that's what a sane person says. I'm so sane.
Yeah, no, do take care of yourself over there. My impression is it's not over yet. That this could get worse. I hope it doesn't. But my impression is that these people just don't melt away.
Time will tell. Time will tell.
All right. Listen, Seamus, mind yourself, and we will be in touch. Talk to you soon. Take care.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, if nothing else, that's how it goes with us on this bloody podcast. Sometimes you're there and you're thinking, listen, we'll be talking about this, and then you get a text message from someone saying, yeah, I'm free right now. It's a bit bizarre, but it's always great to touch base with Seamus.
That's why it's worth paying for the Tortoise Shack, because we do get interesting people from all around the world to have a chat. Now, I know anybody listens to this is a patron already, but look, spread it to your friends, or you can buy it for your friends.
Yeah, listen, we do appreciate it. We appreciate all the feedback, but we do need support. So let people know. Honestly, just go out, tell 10 people. Maybe some of them will click on, some of them will listen. Maybe they even learn something. They won't learn from me, but we do have some great guests as well. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. subscribe now on Patreon.